Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic, but don't have a radio nearby? Then you need to download our new app. With the News Radio Pensacola app, you can get text alerts for breaking news, severe weather, and traffic delays. Plus, customize your alerts so you only get the information you need. It's easy to sign up for text alerts. Just download our app, create an account, and select the alerts you want to receive. You can even change your settings at any time. So what are you waiting for? Download the News Radio Pensacola app today and start getting text alerts. Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
I believe that this institution is poised to take a major leap when it comes to its presence, when it comes to the programming that goes on here, and when it comes to the quality of students that we recruit. And I think we have to aggressively pursue that day in, day out. It has to be part of our fiber. We have to continue to strive for that. We cannot have an attitude that we're just a small, sleepy institution and that we're just good enough.
Manny Diaz, who is now the president-elect at UWF, he has to be confirmed by the Board of Governors coming up a little bit later on in a couple of weeks. But yeah, yesterday during the interview process, he talked about, and he had talked about this back in December as well, that he had a vision of UWF that is not what it currently is. That it's not just a good enough little institution that you could count on sending your kids to if they can't get into the number one or the number two school, not as a safety school. He didn't use that expression. I'm using that expression. He thinks of us as an untapped potential, which from the perspective of the state, the question is, what is the best use of the state money that created this institution? Is it sort of a, community college plus, which is, I'll be honest, having moved here 12 years ago and sent two kids there, I've always thought of it as the place, you go after PSC. If there's not a better school out there that you want to go to, need to go to, or can get into, my kids went there because it was, mechanical engineering, and that's a great program at UWF. They could have gotten into Florida, but they decided to go here for all kinds of reasons, including, the cost of having to live away. But I think it's something we take for granted that UWF is the school that our kids can go to. And it's kind of like our school. We view it as a community university. And that's not a knock. That's like a source of pride. It has a kind of a private school sort of feel, a small town feel, like a lot of things in Pensacola. It's not big and huge, and it's not tiny either. It's somewhere in between with very high quality things for the things that it does. But his picture of UWF is to grow it, to expand it, to make it into something as a first choice school for a lot of people. Not as a second or third choice school, not as a safety school, not as a community university, but as a genuine top contender in the state.
And my vision is that we're aggressively going to pursue that. We're aggressively going to brand this university, and there's going to be substance behind it. It's not just flashy branding. We know we have the substance on the campus. We know we have the academic programs. We know we have the faculty. We need to go and get the resources to continue to grow that and be an asset not only for this community, for this region, but for this state. And that is the vision for me to grow the university.
And when he's said before that, he likes us being number three in the metrics, but he'd like to be one or two, that means competing head-to-head with Florida and FSU. That's a different vision for UWF than we've really ever seen before or certainly ever experienced before. And he recognizes that, that means growth in student population, but not just to grow in order to grow. And he also recognizes that may come at some tension with the existing perception of and nature of UWF.
Part of that is enrollment growth. But I think when we do that, we have to be careful, right? We have to be responsible in that growth. Because there's a certain point where you can lose your identity, right? And you can lose what you do best. And so we will make sure that as we grow, we do that responsibly. And it's not getting bigger for the sake of getting bigger. It's to maintain quality, continue to achieve those benchmarks and metrics that we're accountable for, and continue to be a pride of this community and continue to be a pride of this state.
So my question for you, 437-1620, I genuinely want your answer, especially want your answer if you're a parent of a kid who's likely to go to UWF or considering it? And also, if you are a graduate or have kids who have already gone there, what's your picture of the future of UWF? What do you want? It's clear what Manny Diaz wants. He got approved by the Board of Trustees yesterday. His, I think, best selling point, if you want to say this is why he should be president, is that he has relationships in Tallahassee. He knows how to get money. He's going to be fundraising very aggressively. He even laid out a strategy for that yesterday. He knows how to do all the things to accomplish the growth, bigger, competitive, statewide, number one school kind of thing that he has in mind. My question for you is, do you want that? Is that your picture? And I don't know how I feel about that. I love UWF as it is. Maybe it's a little bit selfish to want to kind of keep it to ourselves. I know that if you are a bigger prestige school, you'll have a better time attracting and keeping teachers who won't view UWF as the place they go until they find something that's, you know, if they're higher caliber, maybe they can get a better, what they view as a better place. You know, the idea of having a university that you know your kids can almost certainly get into, a 60% acceptance rate. You know, FSU and Florida are more in the, like, you know, 20 to 30-ish kind of range. It's much more selective. And, you know, 60% is why, for a lot of people, it's your safety school. And again, that's not a knock. That's just kind of what it has always been. Do you want a school that maybe a lot of your kids can't get into if that acceptance rate drops to 40 or 30? And even he has acknowledged that, you know, I was kind of talking with him about this, asking him, what is your goal size-wise? Because that's a relevant question. And his answer is, I don't have a size goal per se in mind, although he kind of said in the 16, maybe 1,000 range, which is just a little bit more than it is right now. But if we have more demand for the product, it basically you're going to wind up saying no to more people and being more selective. That means a higher caliber of students, but that also means, again, some of your kids won't get in who would otherwise have gotten in. And do you agree with that way of doing things? We'll come back to this in a second because I genuinely want your input on this. 437-1620. We got John Pickens is out today. PJ's got traffic on the fives.
I-10 and 110 are both looking good at this hour. Front gate of NES Pensacola is backed up to about Interbay. There's also areas of patchy fog this morning. Use those headlights. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. Back to Manny Diaz's comments yesterday about growth and the future of UWF and the direction he wants to take it in.
Part of that is enrollment growth. But I think when we do that, we have to be careful, right? We have to be responsible in that growth because there's a certain point where you can lose your identity, right? And you can lose what you do best. And so we will make sure that as we grow, we do that responsibly. And it's not getting bigger for the sake of getting bigger. It's to maintain quality, continue to achieve those benchmarks and metrics that we're accountable for, and continue to be a pride of this community and continue to be a pride of the state.
So not growth for growth's sake, which is, you know, good to hear. I mean, when I heard him talking about this in December, I thought he wants to make us FSU. He wants to make us or USF or UCF, you know, 50 and 70,000 students. And I thought, my God, you know, that's wow. Maybe that's a good thing. They certainly have the space for it. I mean, UWF is nothing if not full of land, right?
You know, the biggest resource we have here, literally the biggest, is our land mass, right? And while we're going to maintain that conservation approach and have a beautiful campus and keep that, we have a lot of space where we can create density and we can create a sense of place.
Yeah, and talking about expanding dorms, because dorms are pretty limited. You know, another thing about UWF is, a lot of people do live on campus, but it is largely a commuter campus, right? And so it would change, which is part of why people perceive it a little bit more like a junior college or a community college, because it's a commuter school largely. Well, that would change. Maybe that would be better. I know for me, one of the things I always sort of, you know, vaguely regretted, low-key regretted about sending my kids to UWF is just that they lived at home. They didn't get the away-at-school experience, which I found incredibly useful and formative. My wife's like, well, so we're going to pay for them to go to Temptation Island? I don't think so. And I'm like, no, I mean, I agree. That's also a criticism of the away at school experience. But it would change what UWF is. It becomes primarily an on-campus as opposed to a commuter school.
One of the things that struck me as I walk out to the Cannon Green is that if I was a student, I would really be a bit disappointed that space doesn't become a space that seems more comfortable and friendly for students to be.
And I have to agree, having been to a lot of universities and taught at a lot of universities and, of course, attended the University of Illinois, I will say that, you know, we don't have the quad kind of space like a lot of other universities have. We have the Cannon Green, but it just doesn't function that way. That's not because of the students. That's probably because of the design.
We have to redo that Cannon Green. We have to provide spaces that students can actually use because we want them to be on campus. And if you want them to be on campus, you have to give them a reason to be on campus. And it's great when you have football days and everybody comes on campus, but our students deserve that on a day-to-day basis when they're going to class and as they're going throughout their day.
It's placemaking. It's turning UWF into the kind of place that people want to live at instead of just come to.
I would like to see our enrollment look like something where we can become very picky and very choosy on the students that we are letting in because it's such quality coming in.
Yeah, again, growing the size some, but in enhancing the demand for it. And this includes, for example, like, you know, going to Tallahassee and going there to be a part of a UWF Days is part of the one of the events that they are definitely doing because he thinks that, you know, that's raising the prestige. If you're going to get money from the state, then people have to know who you are. They have to be aware of you. And that means going and building on the relationships he has as having been a former senator, as having been the former education secretary here in Florida, that he knows people, he knows the university system, so he knows what's out there in terms of competition. Getting money requires an understanding of the budget process, going early, being part of the process, going late when there's the mad scrum for the leftover money, all of that stuff he talked about. Having Alex Smith, who used to work for D.C., who's a very, very smart, capable legislator, lobbyist, and he's over there back and forth all the time right now working with Tallahassee to try to accomplish things. You know, it's one thing to say, well, we kind of sort of hope that you maybe give us money for a couple of these projects versus saying, hey, here's our four projects. Here's how you can fund them. Let's get this done. UWF is a great place that people from Orlando have probably never heard of. They don't know we're in the central time zone, folks. They certainly don't know UWF exists, right? They've heard of Pensacola, you know, and maybe, right, for a lot of people in the rest of the state. And he's saying, I want to raise our profile. I want to raise our presence at Tallahassee. I want to even, you know, federally. I want to tap into that money. I want to go do fundraising. I'm eager to ask people to donate their money to UWF. I'm good at this, he says. I want to, you know, develop our donors at the corporate level. I want to expand our access to donors Fort Walton and, you know, Pensacola and Panama City.
But I do believe that there has to be a dramatic expansion of that donor pool. I think we have, again, you have to be present in Destin. You have to be present in Panama City. We have a board member from Panama City. We have to be present in Fort Walton Beach. And you can't be shy about having conversations. Somebody could be a donor to Northwest Florida State. That's not going to stop me from having those conversations.
Right. That doesn't mean we can't ask them to be a part of UWF support, too.
We have not really even scratched the surface with corporate donors. I think we need to go to big corporate donors and figure out what is the hook to the University of West Florida. What is the interest that they can have at this institution so that we can convince them to give us money?
So let's think, you know, 5-10 years down the road, and you've got, and I know this is not what he is saying, but this is kind of how I extrapolate it. You've expanded majors, you've expanded capacity within those majors, you've, let's say, doubled the size of UW. I mean, that's not going to happen in 5 years, but 10 years, let's say. You put it at 25 or 30,000 students. You've built dorms, you've built restaurants on campus, you've expanded the offerings, you've renovated the green, you've done all kinds of things to make it a kind of place that people want to be instead of just coming to on the weekends when there's a football game. They live on campus, they don't commute. Your acceptance rate is down to, like, say, 40%, so it's harder to get into. People are coming here not just from Florida all over, but from other places in the country, even for various programs that we specialize in and are great at. Would you like that as opposed to what it is today? 437-1620. A couple of texts came in. Somebody says, the only thing, let's see, as a parent and a graduate, all I want to know is how I return my diploma and disassociate with this university now. Wow, that's, I texted back and asked why and haven't gotten an answer yet. I'm guessing because of what is perceived as the rightward movement, but I don't know that, I'm inferring. Somebody else asked, if they want to grow student base, they need to add programs, hire teachers, lots of questions go along with that. Yeah, I would think all of that is coming. Somebody else says, UWF should not be another FSU or University of Florida. It's a great school with middle-class parents can send their average or slightly above average children to get a good education at an affordable price. I agree. Says, I don't think Florida really needs another high-priced school where only a few are allowed to get in. A price at Florida and FSU is not high. It's state set, right? So I think it's a little bit higher, but it's not significantly higher. It's the acceptance rate that is so much different. Somebody else says, 437-1620, I graduated from UWF and have a son currently there now. I met my wife there. The reason I went there was because it was smaller. Had a campus spread out with lots of nature. I liked this. He did say he wants to preserve the natural feel. He doesn't intend to encroach much on that in the concept of building, just FYI. He's aware of that. Had a campus spread out with lots of nature. I like the smaller class size and how close it is to the beach. My son's going there because he wanted to stay close to home and his friends. I lived on campus. My son lives at home. Personally, I would prefer to stay a smaller school, smaller class size, more personal experience with the teachers, but still a good football team and activities to participate in. I went to school at a big school. I tell you, it was great for me, but I also will say there are costs to going to a big school, class size, how many people you meet. There's a lot more people to meet, but sometimes it's like, you know, you go to New York and, you know, millions of people all don't know each other. You know, that's that. Yeah. Class sections that are taught not by professors with degrees, but by adjuncts who are working on a master's. That's a different kind of experience than what we typically have right now. Let's see. They certainly need to expand the dorms, but also add Greek housing. That was something they proposed when I was a sophomore and haven't heard about it since, which was 10 years ago. Somebody says, get ready to cut down all the woods. I don't think that's going to happen, but I understand the concern. As a graduate, somebody else says, I think this is a perfect move. We need something like this because it's university prices, but without all the amenities. I mean, it's cake to get into UWF, so I think this is a good improvement. Saving the nature is perfect, but I don't think we need to spruce it up and make it much bigger. And as a UWF graduate last text year and a former student, the small community feel at UWF is what he misses the most. So there you go. We are definitely on a path towards something else, and that's my question for you is, do you think that's a bad path? He says he understands the issue of not growing for growth's sake and the trade-offs between small school, private school feel versus growth, and he's not interested in growth alone. It might be just development. We'll see. I think the main thing you're going to see is more on-campus stuff, more on-campus living, and also a more selective admissions process going forward. Those are going to be the big things, I think, that happen. 725 on News Radio 92.3. PJ's got traffic on the fives.
Thanks, Andrew. I-10 and 110 are still looking good. If you're on US 98 east and westbound through Navarre and Gulf Breeze, that is flowing smooth. Not showing any slowdowns in Pine Forest or Carr City. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. If you need to sell a home, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenrinke Realty are very good at this. A couple of years ago, they were selling over 200 when the market was hot and prices were low and interest rates were low. Then, you know, prices went up, interest rates went up, people got a little bit more skittish, and so they went from selling well over 200 a year to selling 175, which is still amazing, 3 to 4 per week. Then to 165 last year, and this year, the year before last, and last year, 209, back up 30% in a down market. A lot of folks are struggling to sell homes. In fact, one of the things Christina says is a lot of their clients are people who have tried with other realtors and not sold their home, which is frustrating for them. But she manages to get the job done, gets the home sold, and everything's good. How does she do it? I don't know. Call her and ask. 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenrinke Realty.
Here's today's Strength for Life with your host, Pastor James C. Johnson.
One of the most popular Christian hymns in the world is Jonathan Newton's Amazing Grace. And the word grace simply means unmerited favor. And grace is beautifully displayed in the cross of Jesus Christ. Grace is a step beyond mercy. Remember that mercy is withholding a penalty that you justly deserve, and of course we love mercy. However, grace is not only withholding a penalty that we rightly deserve, but grace is also giving us something that we have not earned. The fact is that we're all sinners, and the Bible says we deserve punishment for our sin. But God's grace says, here's Jesus, and he has perfectly paid your sin penalty and mine. Believe on him today. That's amazing grace.
That was James C. Johnson. He serves as the pastor of North Stone Baptist Church in Pensacola, Florida. For more Strength for Life, please visit our website, strengthforlife.church.
Join Stephen Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at George Stone Technical College for Boat Smart on the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 10 a.m. Key Marine sponsoring the show. When Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service Technicians, they hire students from George Stone Technical College. Have a boating question for Stefan? Then give us a call at 437-1620. It's a dream team, so join them today at 10 a.m.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic updates, but don't always have time to listen to the radio? Well, now you can get text alerts from the News Radio Pensacola app.
It's all psychological. You yell Barracuda. Everybody says, huh? What? You yell Shark. We've got a panic on our hands on the 4th of July.
Wake up in the morning feeling like P. Diddy.
Hey, what up, girl?
Grab my glasses, I'm out the door.
Oh, I don't know. Can we play that song anymore?
With a bottle of Jack.
Wake up in the morning trying out the baby oil. 728 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Oh, man. Fog. It is very, very pea soupy out there. So please be careful when you're driving. A lot more text on UWF. I'll see if I can get to them in a second. David Wayne has our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Protests are expected today in two American cities after shooting incidents involving ICE agents. Protests continuing in Minneapolis over the shooting of a 37-year-old woman by an ICE agent earlier this week. And then yesterday in Portland, ICE agents were attempting to a traffic stop when a driver reportedly tried to run over an agent. Shots were fired there and two people were hurt. A Supreme Court decision could come at any time on the legality of President Trump's global tariffs. The justice has heard the case in November and could issue a ruling as early as today. The high court's ruling could have massive implications for American consumers, businesses, the economy, and presidential authority as well. And NASA says the ISS crew returning to Earth will be leaving shortly because of a medical situation with a crew member. NASA had a news conference Thursday. They say the unnamed crew member is in stable condition, but they're planning on bringing the crew home within the coming days.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. A couple more texts on UWF. UWF has been steadily growing for decades. I expect more of that trend. It's not going to become McMansion U just because there is only so much market here. Somebody else says UWF needs to dump football and use the money they're wasting on football to invest in student initiatives and research. Somebody else says if they want more students on campus, they'll need to beef up their student engagement and activities department. And what about traffic on 9 Mile? If they live on campus, there probably shouldn't be much traffic, so I don't think that's likely an issue.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. The National Guard is on standby in Minneapolis, where protests are expected for a third straight day. Following ICE involved shooting of a 37-year-old woman. Fox's Alex McAdams in the city.
When you ask the feds, they say quite clearly that this agent acted in self-defense when he opened fire and killed this woman in Minnesota. But when he asked the protesters here on the ground, you guys, they say that ICE agents are killers and they want them out of their community.
Minnesota Governor Tim Walz wants residents used today as a day of unity to remember Renee Good. Anger in Portland, Oregon. Federal agents shoot two accused gang members who DHS says has ties to Trinidad Aragua. President Trump, along with top cabinet members, will be meeting with oil company executives, including Chevron and Exxon, over rebuilding the oil industry. In Venezuela, now that Nicolas Maduro is sitting in a Brooklyn, New York detention center. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 731 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. It is 68 degrees this morning. Very foggy. We'll get to our full forecast with Brooke Richardson. That's up in just a few minutes. First, taking a look at our headlines today. Escambia County deputies resolving a standoff yesterday on LaRuth Drive and Ferry Pass. Officials say 37-year-old Philip Resmondo was arrested after barricading himself inside of a home. Now, that standoff began when deputies responded to initially a criminal mischief call in the late morning for a man hitting a stop sign with a baseball bat. When officers arrived, Resmondo ran inside the home and refused to come out, reportedly shooting fireworks at deputies. This neighbor talked with Channel 3.
I heard a loud banging, and I thought somebody was probably doing construction in the area or around the house. And I looked out the window, and that's whenever I saw what appeared to be a tall man just with a baseball bat in his hand, just swinging and hitting a stop sign. And I felt like the first thing in my mind was, okay, let me go ahead and at least call the police, make sure everything's okay, because you don't really ever see somebody with a baseball bat swinging in there, hitting a stop sign.
And SWAT did assist in that operation. Resmondo is charged with aggravated assault on an officer, criminal mischief, and property damage. He's currently being held without bond in the Escambia jail. Family members said he's on federal probation and also has had struggles with mental health issues. Well, emergency crews responded to a crash on Three Mile Bridge this week that had left a driver trapped. The accident happened at the Gregory Street exit when two racing vehicles apparently collided. According to Pensacola police, the situation was pretty serious.
Officers responded to the Gregory Street exit from the bridge for a crash with injuries. One vehicle, the driver had to be taken from the vehicle, had to be rescued from the vehicle, and the second vehicle caught fire.
And that's PPD's Mike Wood. Now, despite the severity of the crash, both drivers sustained non-life-threatening injuries and are expected to be all right. But Gulf Breeze police are investigating the racing aspect of that incident and are expected to pursue super speeder charges. Escambia County Commissioners postponed discussion about future plans for the Midtown Commercial Park to conduct some soil testing yesterday. The 100-acre site on North Palafox was the location of the largest environmental relocation effort in American history after toxic chemicals were discovered back in 1997. More than 400 homes in the minority neighborhood were relocated after a wood treating company left chemicals on the site between 1942 and 1982. The EPA cleaned up the site, but, well, no homes can be built there now. County leaders do believe that the restriction could be lifted with updated testing. Commissioner Lumen May says the county should test the soil again to assure citizens it's safe. The county is looking at the land for potentially a 10-acre fire training site and a new animal shelter. The county asked their environmental team to provide a cost estimate for retesting before their January 22nd meeting. It's 7:35 here at News Radio 92.3. Again, a bit of a foggy morning right now. We've got 68 degrees. And let's get a look here at our traffic on the fives with PJ.
Traffic's brought to you by Knox Pest Control. Their family serving your family since 1929. For information on a free pest or termite quote, visit knoxpest.com. Knox knocks them out. I-10 and 110 are both still looking good at this hour. Gulf Beach Highway not showing any delays. No delays on Burgess or Olive. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives. Back to you.
Thank you very much. Now our Channel 3 forecast with meteorologist Brooke Richardson.
We are going to be looking at temperatures staying warm as you go through your day today. Touch of some fog this morning. High near 75 degrees this afternoon. 20% chance of a shower or thunderstorm. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 67. Heading into Saturday, 80% chance of showers and thunderstorms. High near 75. Going into Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 48. For Sunday, partly cloudy skies. High near 57. And Sunday night, temperatures dropping near 36. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
And we've got 67 degrees right now. That fog is looking pretty thick out there. Our next news is at 8. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Princeton Grove, a new affordable housing community in Crestview, is now taking applications for one- and two-bedroom apartments. Princeton Grove features a resort-style swimming pool, pickleball court, dog park, state-of-the-art fitness center, Energy Star-rated appliances, granite countertops, and for a limited time, Princeton Grove is offering one-bedroom apartments for $799 and two bedrooms at $1099 without any application fees. Princeton Grove Apartments in Crestview. Location, community, quality living. All starts at Princeton Grove.
Ladies, join us to be the impact in 2026. I'm Martha Holden, president of Impact 100 Pensacola, a women's organization that has given over $18 million to nonprofits right here. Meet other members and hear about the impact our funding has made at meet and mingle sessions through mid-February. Women 18 and older are invited to join us by March 1st. For details, check us out on Facebook or visit impact100pensacola.org. That's impact100pensacola.org.
Hey, Pensacola, get ready for a midday delight that'll have you hooked. Weekdays from 11 until 2 on News Radio Pensacola. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show. Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins are the dynamic trio that'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud during your lunch break. They dish out the hottest topics, bring you the latest news, and deliver their unique blend of humor and insight that'll have you coming back for more. It's the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show on News Radio Pensacola. 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Waking up to ash and dust, I wipe my brow and I sweat my rust. I'm breathing in the chemicals. I'm breaking in.
Good morning, 7:38 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News, and there's a very interesting story I saw the other day in Variety Magazine, and it's a culture issue. It's a gender issue. It's kind of wokeism and all of that wrapped into one. I thought it was a very fascinating article, the headline of which was, "Women directors make up 8% of this year's 100 top-grossing filmmakers in a steep drop from 2024. And then, you know, we go from there. So the study basically looked at 2025 as what they called a great recession for women directors, with just 9 women directors attaching their names to the 100 top-grossing films in the U.S. box office. That's down from previously. It had been a little bit higher in the past. But you said there'd been 15, for example, in 2024. It was 13%. And so they're saying this is, you know, a step backward for access and ability for women to make big budget films or to be involved in these big budget films. To me, I just ask a lot of questions. You know, I don't know, asking these questions might make me seem like a jerk, but these are the questions that I'm thinking of. What would be the reason, other than just, you know, institutional sexism, which is, I think, what the study's kind of implying, right, is that there are not opportunities for women to direct big-budget films. The industry is against them. The industry doesn't trust them, doesn't empower them, doesn't allow them access. There's something about the, you know, the boys' network in Hollywood or wherever, because films aren't always made in Hollywood anymore. But there's something about this that says, you know, women are not really welcome here, not in the same amount. Whenever I see a story like this, and there are other stories that deal with, you know, gender imbalances in any particular field, I always ask questions. Is it possible that it's because of institutional sexism? I mean, it's always possible. But is it possible that there are other reasons for this numerical disparity? For instance, as a premise, it's been my perception that the people who try to make films, you know, the film studios, their primary goal is to make money. And so if they think that investing in male directors is more likely to make them money, or there just happen to be more male directors, well, they're going to do what makes them money. And if they discovered through experimentation that having female directors was a way to make more money, well, they'd make more female-directed films. I mean, the idea that these, you know, film companies and their investors are all looking at female directors and saying, "Yeah, no, we could make lots of billions over there, or tens of millions over there, but no, a woman, come on now, really?" You know, I mean, like, that doesn't add to me. So what are some of the other explanations? Well, and again, I'm not advocating any of these are true. I'm just proposing. Instead of rushing to the assumption that it's institutional sexism, maybe women don't try to go into directing in the same numbers as men try to go into directing. I mean, I don't know, but it's possible. You know, it could be that women and men are equally interested in directing films, but it could also be possible that by a 8-to-1 or 9-to-1 ratio or 6-to-1, depending on the year, you know, maybe there's just a lot more guys who try to direct. That's entirely possible. Maybe, and I know you're going to hate me for asking it, but maybe women as a group in general are just not as good at directing. Well, okay. Think of sports as a good example. If instead of having men's sports and women's sports, we just had sports, which of course you do in the men's category, you know, women can play men's sports. They're not prohibited. They just don't compete as well. What if it turned out somehow in all of the variables that women just weren't as good at directing as men? Well, Andrew, how dare you? Well, are women the same as men or are women different from men? Well, we believe both. Okay. Because, you know, the premise of modern feminism is that men and women are exactly the same, except they're so different that you have to have women in every group because that totally changes the group. Well, it sounds like you're saying women are different. They see the world differently. They express themselves differently. They engage in relationships differently. They have what you would generally, you know, people would say they have a more nurturing style of interaction. They have a more social sense of how they engage with other people. Okay, cool. Is it possible that all of that bundle translates to a different level of effectiveness in directing? Is it possible? Of course it's possible. Is it also possible it's institutional sexism? That's obviously possible too. Does having a woman make the movie different? This is where it gets interesting. Does having a woman director make the movie different? Well, the advocates for female equality in movie directing would, of course, say yes. Yes, that's why we want women to direct, because their perspective, their slice of the world, their way of creating scenes and shots and plots and writing the script and all of this. Of course, a woman's going to make the movie different. Okay, cool. I agree. Generally, is it then possible that making a different movie would be less desirable from an audience spending their money on it perspective? Oh, you say, well, that can't account for what Americans and people want to buy. I mean, they're just, you know, bigots. They don't like the movies that women make as much. Okay, back to my original point. Do movie houses want to make money or not make money? You see what I'm getting at? Like, is there more to this? Is it possible the movies are equally as good when judged by consumer response? It would seem that's not the case because, again, these film houses are in the business of making money. The idea of hiring women directors is, if it's profitable, it's good PR. It makes people like you if you can promote it. Why on God's green earth would they not want to hire more of them? The burden is on you to explain the facts that they're not. Again, institutional sexism, and please understand, I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm just saying, you know, 2026, it's not the 1950s. And the modern film house, I think, wants to make money, wants to look good, wants to look socially engaged. They don't want to be the company that doesn't hire a lot of women. They want to be the company that can be celebrated for having a lot of female-based films. So why aren't they? You know, gender anarchists or modern feminists, not the same thing exactly, but the idea that gender should be, there's nothing to it, you know, that sex, there's nothing to it. That, and yet, again, if you get a different result, if they change the society that they participate in, and I believe that they do, if politics is different because women are involved in, and I believe that it is, if businesses are different because women are in leading it, and I believe that they are, then why would you think that women going into making films would not make them differently, which they would, but that that might not then have a consequence? I mean, even this is going to sound obnoxious, but just consider the possibility. Do men prefer to watch films directed by men, or do they prefer to watch films directed by women? I don't actually know the answer. I don't know if anybody really knows the answer, but let's imagine that men prefer to watch films directed by men. That's why they spend their money that way. Okay. Chick flicks versus action films. However you want to care, but a lot of men have made chick flicks, right? Okay, so is it also possible that women like films directed by women maybe more than they like films directed by men? It's possible. Is it possible women like films directed by men better? Well, Andrew, how could that be? I don't know, but is it possible? Look at comedians. 8 to 15% of comedians, stand-up comedians, are women. There's a lot of women who like comedy. Is that because, again, there aren't women trying to get into the industry, or because it's sexist, or because actually women generally, if you give them 10 male and 10 female comics, they're more likely to like the male comics, and that's what the marketplace rewards? Just saying, ask questions. Don't take for granted something, especially when you feel like, well, I don't know, you can't bring that stuff up. That's not fair. That's sexist to ask that question. No, it's honest to ask that question. And then look at the results. It could entirely be sexism. It could entirely be legitimate reasons that maybe we don't love about ourselves, or maybe just are true of ourselves and there's no reason not to love them, because maybe men and women are different. And maybe whatever those differences are produce a different result in directing films as opposed to any other endeavor where women might be better at it or be more rewarded at it or dominate the profession more. 746 on News Radio 92.3. Feel free to text me and yell at me, 437-1620. PJ's got traffic on the fives.
Traffic's running heavy. Beverly Parkway eastbound between North W Street and Palafox. No delays on 3 Mile Bridge. 9 Mile, accident-free. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. A couple of texts in here, 437-1620. Catherine Bigelow, who I agree is a fantastic director. James Cameron's wife heard it at one time. Anyway, directed Point Blank, Zero Dark Thirty, Hurt Locker, all very good movies. I'd want to know, somebody says, how many films were directed by women? Maybe their films just don't score at the box office. I think this, I mean, there's a question about that. There's also a question of, well, they don't score at the box office because they're not entrusted with big budget films. And so there's kind of a, you know, chicken or an egg problem there. But I agree that's a fair question to ask. Somebody says, honestly, I've never cared about the director, but have more about the actors. Yeah, same. I can't remember ever looking at a film and saying, directed by a woman, I don't think so. Or directed by a man, thank goodness. You know, like, I do know which directors I like. And I do know which actors or actresses I like. And more importantly, I know which writers I like. I think writers have a much bigger impact on the film than directors or even actors, frankly. But that's a different question. Somebody says the studio system more and more is moving to billion-dollar franchises that emphasize spectacle, and men tend to pay for that experience more than women. There are dozens and dozens of great female directors, but they thrive in the independent scene, which, again, is to my point about how they make a different product. And listen, if that product is not as commercially viable as the product that men are more likely to make, well, that explains everything you're seeing. That's not sexism. That's capitalism. They're different. Well, capitalism should be different. Okay, I mean, you know, that's fine. I don't always love capitalism, but at least call it what it is. Somebody says, in all honesty, I've never paid attention to who actually directs or produces a film, whether it be a man or a woman. If it's a good movie, it's a good movie. It doesn't really matter, all of that, and I tend to be the same way. So, a lot of times we're afraid to ask just sensible questions. And this is part of the problem with ideological bias, is it makes it seem like a fact should always be interpreted a certain way because it fits a certain narrative. And I'm saying is, you know, use your brains, ask more questions. That's what my mom always said. You know, Andrew, you've got a brain. Why don't you use the brain God gave you? My mom said to me, you know, she was not necessarily a catchphrase kind of person, which I am not as a parent either. And I think it's actually a flaw, but she was to some degree. She's more than I was. My wife is actually pretty good at catchphrases. Her favorite is don't count your chickens before it's hatched. I mean, she said that 1,000 times to the kids and to me. But my mom's phrase to me was, why don't you use the brain God gave you? Okay. You know, and that's, don't just assume that because there's a number that shows a disparity in an industry favoring men over women, that should be interpreted according to the, you know, modern feminist narrative. There may be lots of other explanations too. That's all. 7:49 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru in Pensacola. Add more road to your trip with the new 2026 Subaru Crosstrek or Forester Hybrid. Our new hybrids will keep you going no matter where the road goes. With up to 597 miles per tank, the Crosstrek Hybrid easily takes you to more places. And the Forester Hybrid sports a driving range of up to 581 miles per tank. Mileage like that lets you journey farther. And combined with Subaru's legendary capability of standard symmetrical all-wheel drive, you'll be able to handle any unexpected conditions and terrain with ease. Paved roads, gravel roads, just about any road, they're all fair game in the new 2026 Subaru Hybrid. Better fuel economy, legendary reliability, you'll find both in the Subaru Crosstrek Hybrid and Subaru Forester Hybrid. Love goes the extra mile at Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola. For details, call 877-554-9791.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
As a mom, comforting my family is what I do best. Vicks VapoStick provides soothing, non-medicated Vicks Vapors in an easy-to-apply stick, and it dries fast, so there's no mess. I use it to comfort myself and my family.
Thanks, Mom.
Vicks VapoStick, soothing comfort for the whole family. And try Vicks VapoShower Max for steamy Vicks Vapors when you need more comfort for yourself. Use as directed.
News Radio Pensacola has a team of experienced and award-winning journalists dedicated to bringing you the most accurate and up-to-date news coverage. Informative, local, dependable.
A guy don't walk on the lot lest he wants to buy.
They're sitting out there waiting to give you their money. Are you going to take it? Are you man enough to take it?
Get them to sign on the line which is dotted. 7:52 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Man, super foggy all this week, and this morning is no different. So please use some caution, drive a little slower, put your headlights on, not your high beams, and do, if you are going slower than the appropriate speed out of safety, do put your hazards, your blinkers, whatever you want to call them on. Let's see, David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, Andrew. President Trump expected to meet with oil executives at the White House today as he tries to spur investment in Venezuela's oil infrastructure. That meeting coming after the U.S. military attacked Venezuela and captured Nicolas Maduro. Trump accused Venezuela of stealing American oil when it nationalized its assets years ago. Protests expected today in two cities after shooting incidents involving federal agents. Protests continuing in Minneapolis over the shooting of a 37-year-old woman by an ICE agent there. Then in Portland yesterday, ICE agents were attempting a traffic stop when the driver reportedly tried to run over an agent and shots were fired there. Two people were injured. Some 60 people.
By the way, have you seen the new? There's another video that's been released in the Minnesota case. CNN had put it out. That it's from like a house, like a backyard camera, you know, a security camera.
Right.
Maybe, I don't know, a couple hundred feet away or something. It's a little bit grainy. But what that video shows is that she went and parked across the street, like crossways in the street, for like 3 minutes. Her wife had gotten out. That's the one who had shot that video. So they were clearly intending to be a disruption to the operations that they were, you know, that was going on there. And then it was a couple of minutes later when the ICE agents come along. So, you know, we can have a long conversation about who's in the wrong or who's in the right, but this was not just some, oh, she happened to be sideways in the street kind of situation. This was clearly a deliberate effort to be provocative politically. And I think they got an awful lot more than they intended, of course, but that's just true background stuff. So go ahead, David.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how that furthers the reaction from the city and the officials there.
I mean, honestly, at this point, everybody's seeing it according to their bias.
Yeah, well.
I mean, I'm trying really hard to be as neutral about it as I can and relay the facts as I understand them, but, you know, I think I'm kind of on my own in that. Not a lot of people doing it that way.
To be the way for modern current events. It all boils down to which side of the line you're on.
Democrat officials are saying it's a cold-blooded murder, and Republican officials are saying that it was 100% justified. I think there's a lot more to this story than that. So anyway, go ahead, David.
About 60 people were evacuated from the Disneyland monorail on Thursday after a power outage. The monorail apparently stopped near Space Mountain at the theme park in Los Angeles. Police and first responders had to use ladders to get the passengers down safely. But the good news, nobody was hurt.
All right, David, thank you so much for the update. 7:55 here on News Radio 92.3. PJ sitting in for John Pickens with traffic on the fives.
I-10 and 110 both looking good at this hour. Just some minor slowdowns. Highway 90 in pace between Jernigan Road and Chemukla Highway. Also, Highway 29 is accident-free. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. Earlier I told you there was somebody who texted me and said that they were almost willing to give back their degree at UWF because of the changes, and I asked for follow-up. They texted and said, I'm proud of the education I earned, but I'm deeply troubled by how UWF's leadership change was handled. I completely agree with that criticism. The process sidelined faculty, alumni, and the local community in favor of a politically driven outcome that lacked transparency and genuine competition. Again, agree. Longstanding institutional norms around governance and academic independence were overridden very quickly. As a parent and a graduate, that signals a shift away from the values I believe the university stood for. For me, disassociating is about principle, not politics. This actually is echoing what Heather Riddell, who is the faculty senate president, said during the confirmation process yesterday for Manny Diaz. She read a prepared statement. She again represents the faculty.
I'm going to read a statement that I've prepared. Faculty have expressed concerns to me about the process in detail in the past several weeks. As part of the committee, I have some as well. This statement really focuses more on the process, not the candidate, as we've all been able to witness the interview this morning. The hiring of the president should be public and transparent as a public institution. We are accountable to taxpayers and our community.
Yeah, agreed. She goes on.
BogReg 1.002 says that we must bring three applicants unless there is an infeasible situation with exceptional circumstances.
What she's talking about there is you don't have to cut to three if it's not practically possible to do that, but you have to explain what that practical impossibility is.
There doesn't appear to be one. As a faculty representative, without additional candidates, there is an inability to compare and determine if the solo candidate is indeed the best fit for the university. Without a written explanation detailing the infeasible exceptional circumstances, stakeholders are left without a clear understanding of the decision.
Yeah. I mean, again, completely agree. And by the way, this is really not a criticism of Manny Diaz from her, and she said that. She's not saying this, but this is definitely a criticism of Zach Smith. Zach Smith, who's been really just nothing but trouble on both boards. And here, he was the one in charge of the process of selecting Manny Diaz from all of the applicants and is the one who has said, well, we had to go with one. It was, you know, justified under the BOG regulations for having only one. No, it's not, unless you're going to give better explanations, and nobody really has so far.
I'm not voting against interim President Diaz and the work he's done. I'm going to be voting against the process that led us here. We look forward to building a positive working relationship with the next president. And if it is indeed interim President Diaz, I believe we have built good rapport and we will continue to work towards UWF's success. Thank you.
So they go on and vote, and she was the only dissenting vote against it. So it was unanimous but for her, and her vote was not against Manny, but was against the process that produced Manny as the only outcome. And again, I've said this, you know, I was unsure about him, and still have questions. I mean, we're still early on in this process. I do think that if your goal is to develop UWF into this more competitive first-choice school, not just a regional university, he makes sense. Listening to him talk about what he wants to do in Tallahassee in terms of relationships, what he wants to do with developing the on-campus life and all that, I get his picture. Again, I'm not sure I agree with his goal for UWF, but at least I understand it. And there was a very interesting moment where he kind of explained his background, which I thought was fascinating.
My parents fled Cuba in the 1960s due to the Castro regime and communism, and they came to the state of Florida, and they actually met in the state of Florida. And I was born in Hialeah, Florida, a blue collar working class community down in South Florida. And growing up, I had the opportunity to learn two languages at the same time, which is interesting, right? Because, you know, I credit Sesame Street with some of my, I struggled at home to get anybody to speak English, right? So I had to learn my English language another way, and obviously in school. And I credit education for all the opportunities that I've had. And I thank my parents, my father who's no longer with us, and my mom who's down in Hialeah, for the emphasis on education. Without education, I would not have any of the opportunities that I've had.
I think it's a great story. I think it's interesting his emphasis on Sesame Street for learning English, and obviously with the big changes at PSC related to WS area, you know, there's a relevance there. Also, and I throw this in there just as a wrench for you, think about the comparisons between UWF and the selection process and the Pensacola Police Department search for chief.
Local news every hour and breaking news when it matters most. News Radio 92.3, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.
This is a Fox News alert. A drop in unemployment. I'm Dave Anthony. We just got that update to the economy, though there was a little less hiring last month.
There were 50,000 new jobs created last month. Economists were predicting 60,000. The unemployment rate improved, declining to 4.4%.
Fox's Jenny Casola. That's a 2/10 decline from November's rate, which was a 4-year high. We don't have a reaction yet from President Trump, who in a few hours will meet with oil company executives.
They've been great. They really have been. I mean, everything we've wanted, they've given us.
That's